If there was a time that was very ripe for rebellion in the history of the children of Israel, it would be found in Numbers, the 16th chapter. The children of Israel had reached the promised land, and then they were denied entry into that land. They were made to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until all those who were 20 years old and upward died. And so in that wandering, they would have death of their grandparents, their parents, uncles, aunts, older siblings, and they would witness it all through that period of time. Also during that period of time, young people would be born that did not know the actual events as to why they were wandering in the wilderness and why they were not allowed to enter into the promised land. They would only know what would be taught to them by their ancestors. And so the disgruntled masses would seek to blame somebody for their plight that they were in. Numbers, the 14th chapter, we have them denied entry. And Numbers, the 16th chapter, is where we're at. And I don't know how much time has passed in between these two chapters. But we have a man named Korah, a Levite, who decided this was a good time for rebellion, and he was going to step up and be the leader of this group. Numbers 16 in verse 1. He has with him three others, Dathan, Abiram, and On, who are of the tribe of Reuben. Now, On is mentioned in verse 1, but he's not mentioned anywhere else in the chapter. I don't know if he had a change of mind in regard to this rebellion, which we would like to think, but more likely than that, he probably died prior to the rebellion being completed, as people were dying all the time during that 40-year period. There were also 250 princes of assemblies who were called famous and renowned, who joined together with this group. They came to Moses and to Aaron in verse 3, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said unto them, "Ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord?" If you understand anything about politics, you recognize you don't say, "I want to be the leader of everybody," but you want to say, "I represent the people. I care about you. I'm just one of you." And so he says, all the congregation are holy, to praise all the people, as he tries to say that Aaron has lifted himself up, saying, "I want to be the high priest." You remember when Aaron said that? Probably don't. Or Moses, when he said, "I want to be the leader of this people." No, what you remember is Moses not wanting to be the leader of these people. These two men did not lift themselves up. But if Korah is going to push his agenda, he's got to make believe that they did. And so he brings forth this faulty charge. And you know, accusations that are made by a rebel very often apply to the rebel more than to the accused. As we have a description of Moses, Numbers 12 and 3, we recognize that he's the meekest man on the face of the earth. The meek man does not seek to promote himself and to be the leader and to be loved and cherished and take advantage of others. In fact, we see the exact opposite with Moses. Four times he defends Israel where God's wrath is ready to destroy them all. Now, if he was not meek, if he was looking to promote himself, he would not do any defending of Israel, but he'd allow God to wipe them all out and make a new nation from him so that he could be number one. In Exodus chapter 32, verses 9 and 10, we have the children of Israel making the golden calf. This is right after they get out of Egypt. Moses is in the mountain receiving the law. God said, "They have contaminated themselves. Go down. I'm going to destroy them and start over with you." And Moses contends with him not to do that, and God repents of it. And then in Numbers, the 14th chapter, verses 10 through 12, as they had the opportunity to enter the promised land, but 10 spies come back with a negative report, and the children of Israel decide, "We ought to go back to Egypt." And Moses says, "No, you shouldn't do that," and they got ready to stone him and Aaron. And then the glory of God appeared in the tabernacle, and he told them, "I'm going to destroy this people, and I'll start over with you." And again, Moses, his own life having been threatened just moments before, contends on behalf of the people. God says, all right, I'm not going to destroy them all, but I'm going to cause them to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, and everyone who's 20 years old and upward is going to die because of their disobedience. Now, at the golden calf, about 3,000 Israelites died from that behavior. Probably somewhere upwards of 1 million died in the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. But they weren't done yet. In Numbers, the 16th chapter, the text that we're dealing with, again, verse 21, this is when Korah and his band have gathered together. God tells Moses and Aaron, separate yourselves from them. I'm going to destroy them all. I'm going to consume them in a moment, he says. And Moses and Aaron fall on their face before God and say, would you destroy everyone for one person's sin? And so God, again, alters his plan. And then in Numbers 16, verse 45, after Korah and his confederates are killed, we find the children of Israel rebelling one more time. And God says the same thing. Separate yourself from them. I will consume them in a moment. And again, Moses and Aaron work to save the children of Israel. Moses was not a guy who was looking to promote himself. Neither was Aaron. Let's look at the reply that was made to Korah and the Levites. Verses 5 through the first half of verse 7, Moses says, well, God will show you tomorrow who's holy. Remember, the argument was that you guys are promoting yourselves. You're trying to separate yourselves as holy, but God says this whole people are holy. He said, well, God will show us who is holy tomorrow. And he says, the last half of verse 7, ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. And we recognize that is true because of what he says next, verses 8 through 10, that the honor that God has given to you Levites, these 250 men plus Korah, was not enough for them. He says that you have been separated from the congregation as the Levites, as the tribe that's going to take care of the tabernacle. You are nearer to God than all the other tribes. In Numbers 4 and verse 15, we are told that after the implements are covered up, that the sons of Kohath, that's Korah's family, are supposed to carry these things from one place to another. But that wasn't good enough for them. They also had the opportunity to minister, to teach the congregation the word of God. But they wanted more than that. The honor God gave them, they thought, that's not good enough. We want to be better than that. And so they desired the priesthood also. And Moses says, you've rebelled against God, against Aaron, and of course against Moses as well. And we need to understand that there is a rebellion against God when we say, I'm not going to follow your gospel, I'm going to be saved some other way. Or we say, I'm not going to be a member of your church, but I'm going to join some other church. Or we say, I'm not going to listen to the preaching from your word. I'm going to listen to sermons from something else. Or we say, I'm not going to follow qualified elders. I'm going to do what I want. Understand, you are rejecting God when you do that. And you don't want to be in that situation. Moses then tries to talk to Dathan and Abiram. He sends for them, but they refuse to come to him. They just level charges from the distance, from their own tents. They say, well, you took us from the land of milk and honey. You remember how that happened, don't you? Moses delivered them to the threshold of the promised land, and then he said, never mind, let's go back in the wilderness. Remember that? You probably don't, because that's not the way it happened. Moses was ready to bring them in. They were the ones who were afraid to go. And then he says, you killed us in the wilderness. There was no killing by Moses in the wilderness. It was God killing them as punishment for their refusal to enter into the promised land. And they say, now you desire to be prince over us. Yes, Moses always wanted to be in charge, didn't he? He argued with God five times, coming up with excuses why he could not be the deliverer. God says, you're going to do this. He didn't want to be the prince over them. It's a position God put him in. And then, of course, the accusation, you failed to bring us into the land of plenty. The one thing you're expected to do, Moses, come on now. It's one little thing, and you failed. Moses did not fail. They failed Moses. At the end of verse 14, They say, wilt thou now put thou the eyes of these men, out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. They're not going to go and talk to Moses face to face. But when he says putting out the eyes of the man, I believe he's talking figuratively, that you're trying to blind these people to all your faults, Moses. Moses didn't have any of these faults that have been listed. And he puts forth the idea in verse 15 that he hasn't taken anything that he was not entitled to from the people. That none of the charges are suitable for what they have said. So who was then holy? God was going to prove who was holy, who was his persons, and who were not. In verses 16 through 19, Moses gives the instructions to these 250 priests or people, princes, as well as Korah, saying, you get your incense burners and you bring your censers and you be ready to stand before the tabernacle, and God will make his decision about this. Verses 20 and 22, God says, I intend to consume all these people. Get away from them, Moses and Aaron. I'm going to destroy them all. And they say, God, don't destroy all the people for one man's sin. And God gives them opportunity, the children of Israel, one more time to be spared. Said, you get away from these men. You don't stand near them, and you might be spared. And then verses 28 through 33, Moses says, if a death happens to these men that's different from anything you've ever seen before, this is going to prove that I am the Holy One that God is speaking through. They're not going to die naturally. And of course, the children of Israel, I don't know how long they've been in the wilderness, but they've been seeing people die every day. Somebody dies because all these people have to die before the new generation enters the promised land. And so they're used to people dying naturally. He says, now Korah and Dathan and Abiram, they're not going to die naturally of old age. They're not going to die by some enemy. You remember the Amalekites would follow behind Israel, and if anybody would drift behind from the crowd, they would kill them. They'd pick off the weak ones. They're not going to die that way. They're not going to die by Moses that he gives the order. All right, these people are wicked. Stone them to death. Not going to happen. They're going to die a different way. Now what happens is you have Korah standing in front of the tabernacle with the 250 guys around him. Dathan and Abiram refuse to come up. They're at their own tents with all their stuff and their families with them. And God opens the earth. And Korah falls in, and he opens it, and Dathan and all of his family fall in, and he opens it, and Abiram and all of his family and things fall in. And this was not like an earthquake that the ground opens up and remains open. No, it's like us swallowing something. It opens up, gets consumed, consumes those people, and then closes back. But as it's opening up and these people are falling down and screaming in terror, you know what all the people are doing? Running away from them. I don't want to be close to that guy. The people fled. And then after that, after Korah's gone, after Dathan and Abiram are gone, you've got 250 princes standing there holding their censers. And I bet they think, oh no, we backed the wrong horse on this one. We are in trouble now, and they were right. God sent for fire and destroyed 250 princes of the assembly, Levites, who stood up and said, we should be better than what God has given us. The instruction is then given to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, to gather up all the censers. They were going to be beaten into plates that would cover the altar as a memorial of this rebellion, that no one would ever be so stupid again as to say, I'm going to reject God's person, I'm going to reject God's system, I'm going to reject God's plan, and I'm going to lift myself up as somebody special. We don't want people to ever be dumb enough to do that again. But you know what? As fascinating as this story is, the real kicker comes after verse 40. In verse 41, but on the morrow, All the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, saying, "Ye have killed the people of the Lord." What? What kind of moronic behavior is this? Moses caused the earth to open? No, Moses couldn't do that. These are the people of the Lord. No, the Lord just killed them for the rebellion. The thing we need to understand is long after we're dead, our influence lives on. And we better be careful about what kind of influence we disperse to those round about us. You know, these people had the chance to support Dathan and Abiram and Korah when the earth was swallowing them up. They could have stood right by them. "Well, I believe you're God's man. I believe you're a faithful person. I'm going to stand right here with you." They could have done that, but they didn't. They ran for their lives, knowing, "I don't want to be part of God's punishment upon these individuals." They were told by Moses, "You separate yourself from them if you want to be spared." And they did. But now they're coming up claiming, "Well, these are the people of the Lord, and you guys have killed them." You wonder how that got there. You know, while it was happening, nobody would have said that. But after these people were all dead, and all the smoke settled down, then somebody, you know, said, "Well, you know, Dathan was really a pretty good fella." Somebody else says, "Well, that was my cousin Abiram, and I think he, you know," it started going again. And so God's response again is, "Separate yourself. I'm going to consume the people in a minute." And Moses and Aaron again fall down before God, asking him to spare these people. And Moses recognizes the plague has already begun. "Aaron, get your censer and get out there." And he grabs hold of his censer and goes and stands among the people. And I can just vision the way it would look, that everybody on one side of Aaron is dead from the plague. But then you get to the point where there stands Aaron with his censer, and everybody on the other side of him stays alive. Do you think they got the point yet? Do you think they figured out what God is saying and who the people of God are? We're told at the end of the chapter, that 14,700 people died from that plague. All of these Israelites that just keep dying because they don't learn the lessons that ought to be learned. When will they learn, we might think? And when will we learn, we might ask? We should not let our failure, like their failure to enter the promised land, or the death of our loved ones, or the fact that we are young, or what other people might think and do, should never let that influence us from God's plan. The idea that the church of Christ is really not that important, I can go and follow what other men are doing. I don't really need to submit to Jesus, I can follow Joseph Smith in the Mormon church. And I don't really need to read my Bible. I can read some other kind of self-help books, and I'll be all right. Don't leave God's plan. Stay faithful to Him, regardless of whatever failures or your youth or others are doing. You've got to stay close to the Lord. Learn that lesson. Stay faithful in the Lord's church. Number two, appreciate the position God has put you in. Don't think, "Well, I'm a woman, but I want to be a preacher." No, that is not the way you honor God. You honor God by being a good woman, by being precious in His sight, by dressing modestly, by doing good works. Or you're youthful and think, "Well, I want to be an elder." Well, you can't be an elder yet. You're too young. But you've got all this energy and all this strength and all this zeal. Do something that glorifies God with all of that. Or maybe you're a senior, maybe you're an older person. Recognize you can serve God with all the wisdom that you've gained throughout the years. You may be one of great health. Give it much to the church. Give much to the people of God. Give much to the cause of our Lord. You may be having failing health. What are you going to do now? Well, you could be like Irma Jones and you can't come to worship services, but you can send out cards to everyone else. and encourage them on their special days? What about your residence? You have a house big enough that you can entertain some people in? Then do that. Is your occupation one that has some kind of free time with it that you can get away and help other people out at different times of the day? Well, then do that. Whatever position you're in, glorify God and don't complain that you're not in some other position. That is where God put you. Remember what was said to Esther. Maybe God put you in this place at this time for a reason. Indeed, that is true. Do the things that God intended for you to do. Number three, you never honor the dead by lying about their character. And I'm not saying that you need to speak evil of the dead, but don't lie about their character. I can think of the five brethren who had the rich brother who died and found himself in torments in Luke the 16th chapter. And what he wanted while he was in torment was somebody to tell his five brethren, don't behave like me or you'll end up the same place as me. And I can just imagine some preacher at the rich man's funeral talking about what a wonderful man he was and he's in a far better place now, encouraging these five to join him in torment. Don't lie about the character of somebody who's dead. Well, you know, Korah was really a good guy. You know, Dathan really wasn't all that bad. Don't lie about them. Because what it does is it influences the living. It will hurt them. It's not going to affect the dead person. He's where he's at and reaping the rewards for what he has done. But the living are going to listen to that example, follow that example, honor that person, and be lost as well. You don't honor anybody by lying about the character of the dead. Number four, before accusing someone else, examine yourself. The accusation was really the same. You know, Korah says, you take too much upon yourself. Now, that was not true. And when Moses responded, he said, you take too much upon yourself. And that was true. And if Korah and Dathan and Abiram and those 250 princes had examined their self, instead of accusing Moses of being guilty of what they were actually guilty of, they didn't have to die. We need to examine ourselves first, correct ourselves first, and then approach people with the idea of helping them. Finally, recognize we need to humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord that He might lift us up, that He might promote us, that we might do more and more for Him as we increase in our opportunities and abilities. We don't often think about it, but it seems to me that sin very often is an effort to exalt ourselves. You know, the idea that I don't have to do it God's way, I can do what I want, isn't that just really kind of lifting yourself up? That you don't have to follow Him, you don't have to obey Him, you're more important than He is. Isn't that really what you're doing? How about Eve, who wanted to be equal with God? Therefore, she partook of the forbidden fruit. She was trying to promote herself, lift herself up. The Pharisees, who rejected Jesus Christ, the Son of God, and thereby rejected the will of God. Why? Because they were so proud of themselves. And the position that they had, they did not want to relinquish. We're told in regard to the elements of sin, one of those of worldliness is the vainglory or pride of life, where we want to promote ourselves, lift ourselves up, instead of humbling ourselves before the Lord. Obeying the gospel requires humility. We have lifted ourselves up, that's why we sinned, and now we've got to bring ourselves down if we're ever going to obey the gospel of our Lord. See, you need to see the proper position that you're in, and that is a sinner. I've done things my way, and I'm a sinner. I'm in a lost condition, I'm doomed for eternity, and it's all my fault, and what can I do about this mess I'm in? It's like the children of Israel. Men and brethren, what shall we do? We killed the Messiah. God's going to be angry at us, and what's He going to do? There's no Moses to stand up for us right now. If He decides to consume us in a minute, we're gone. What are we going to do about this? And of course, they were humbling themselves, and they were told what they needed to do. Repent and be baptized, every one of you, for the remission of sins. As we recognize ourselves as a sinner in need of help, that we also have to humble ourselves to recognize only God can lift me up out of this mess I've gotten myself into. You know, it kind of gives us a different vision of what baptism is all about. That man of sin is buried. We submit to that burial, and God lifts us up. We're raised up to walk in newness of life, to be a true follower of God, accepting the position of, I'm a Christian now. I will do His will from this day forward. If you are here and not a Christian, I hope that you would consider becoming one. If you are a Christian and you've rebelled against God's rule, like Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and those foolish princes, restore yourself to the Lord by coming to Him. Humble yourselves and let the Lord lift you up. If we can help you in any way, come now while we stand and while we sing.